Hey, welcome to The Look Back, my pandemic podcast, or hopefully post-pandemic podcast, broadcasting here from the basement of Newman Media Studios. My name is Keith Newman, and I'm the host of The Look Back. And this is a place where we have some fun conversations with old friends, a few newsmakers, and some rule breakers, all in the name of sharing insights and experiences along with a little bit of levity and fun. I hope you enjoy the conversation, and if you're so inclined, or perhaps even open to some bribery, you'll share this podcast with some friends who might also enjoy it. This episode is sponsored by Estrella, the blockchain-powered cap table and shareholder management platform that allows executives to manage and leverage their company's equity as a recruitment and retention tool, as well as a resource to enhance company culture. Estrella meets all of your shareholder management needs, along with the highest level of customer service and at the best price. Ask to speak with an equity expert or get a demo today of Estrella at Estrella, Estrella.com. Let's go on to the show. Hey, Zeca Len, welcome to The Look Back. I'm so glad to have you here. I know you're traveling across Europe, getting the year started by hipping and hopping in other lands from your base in California. Of course, you're the general partner of Responsibly Ventures, and you've been doing some great things that I haven't really dug in on my podcast, The Look Back. I've now done 50 episodes, Zeca, and I've still not really dug into what ESG impact investing is all about and how you build a fund around it. What is your criteria, how you look into that space? And frankly, as you and I have spoke, I have a great passion for that area. So I really wanted to dedicate a conversation in just that area. So do you mind giving me a little color around that for myself, for my listeners? And I would really appreciate it. And welcome to the podcast.
50, that is no small accomplishment. That's awesome. That's so awesome. My name is Zeca Len. I'm GP of Responsibly Ventures, and we're a pre-seed VC impact fund. So we focus on companies that are right out of the gate, you know, the companies you love and back, and we share that in common. So when these companies get started, I like to just get as involved as I can be while still staying inactive as a fund manager. We tend not to take board seats in the startups. We tend to work with our LPs and others in the community to help bring advisors to support startups, or just kind of be a friend where I can on Twitter and elsewhere. Really like to try to connect with founders. That's a big part of the job, understanding why people are doing what they're doing and how they got there. And then helping them to accomplish their vision, their dream, their goal. I would like to dig into the impact story and, you know, why it's important to me personally. Could go in the Wayback Machine a little bit, talking about having a background in environmental economics, grew up on an island up in the Pacific Northwest, and a bit of a data brain, data geek, I was a data scientist.
The early days.
And found the world of startups about 5 years ago. Say again?
The early days of data science, if you don't mind.
Yeah. And also, I'm a bit of a hacker. Most data scientists at the time, at least, had PhDs. I did not. And I'm one of those people who just loves to roll up my sleeves and learn everything like Docker and, Python or the R programming language and, you know, early days like with deep learning and things like that. So yeah, it was really exciting when I was doing that. And it has evolved so quickly. I'm really excited about that industry in general. Just like to get my geek on, if you will. Oftentimes I find myself on the weekend just kind of plugging away at some absurd project that seems impossible and it keeps me happy. So yeah, I don't want to steer your show. This is your show, Keith. So you tell me where you want to go. We can talk about impact or whatever you feel comfortable with.
You are on such a good roll. I hate to interrupt, but I think it is really novel to see somebody in your role with that heavy tech orientation steering heavily now towards social impact. So when we say social impact, let's go ahead and define what that means from your lens. And then let's all explore or unpack a little bit around how you select the companies that meet a proper criteria.
You got Absolutely. So social impact traditionally has centered largely around philanthropic capital. And much of that involves things like concessionary returns from things like, revenue share or debt, let's say even joint partnerships, public-private partnerships, and or just simply donations via foundations, et cetera. I like to think of this new era of impact, which is a little bit more so aligned with venture capital. And I use the term social good just to kind of separate the vernacular to some degree. So what is social good? I've been writing quite a bit about this the last couple of years because I really don't know have all the answers and I don't think anyone does. But just one example using AI, actually, a couple of weeks ago, I wrote this article that was actually crafted by ChatGPT-3, but also another great platform called Perplexity AI, which slightly different. So GPT-3, I asked the simple question, what are the top 50 social good measurement systems for early stage companies that maximize revenue and returns, right? So because venture capitalists who care about this. And it was interesting to see the 50 categories, right? And then for each of those categories, I went and I actually asked an additional question set. So it said, I could read it out loud to you. It's really interesting, but I'll share it if you want to put it in the show notes or something like that. It said, digital health. So how do you measure for outcomes in digital health? What are some of the challenges? I plugged that into Perplexity, and Perplexity gave the top sources, say the top five sources, on what are some of the challenges to making an impactful digital health company and what measurement opportunities exist, how some sources have suggested one should measure. So you had everything from climate tech to age tech to ocean tech to climate tech, all the way through the gamut, if you will. These 50 top metric systems. And I was very surprised what actually existed, because I don't have all the answers myself. And just to see the answer being sort of suggested by the super brain, this GPT-3 chat, was just outstanding. And a lot of people have found it really useful. So instead of focusing on what I think I know or what I can validate and verify, I just like to try to create opportunities for the founders to empower themselves and to support them in their journey, however they see fit, the way they want to measure and manage. So I would actually say that it's not a very clear area. It's an evolving area.
No, clearly evolving is, and there's a lot of money chasing after some of these spaces. So how do you select, how do you qualify a company that you might decide to invest in?
I love that. Well, so we are a thematic generalist fund for the most part. We focus on pre-seed and we focus on US headquartered startups. And then I look at what I call these impact verticals, which are these subsect. They're like sub verticals, if you will. So digital health would be in the vertical of the broader health ecosystem. Climate would be in the category of energy as a sector, other subcategories within impact focus. So whenever there's a company that matches certain categories, I usually look for three attributes of a particular company. I usually use just as a baseline, just to kind of keep myself focused, as I use the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, three of them per deal. And when I see those within a particular company for what we back, when these all sort of get put into our portfolio, it starts to look something like an ESG portfolio. But I don't call us an ESG fund because I think there are a million different ways you could also do ESG. So you could if you wanted to, but I just don't use that vernacular, I guess.
Yeah, I understand that too. It's sometimes can be a thorny topic or capture. So you have to invest where you're also going to see a great return. And Lord knows that there's a tremendous amount of opportunity in what you might broadly call impact or social impact or environmental. And I know you're involved in all of those areas also. I particularly think the economy can save and create so much from a more efficient use of our resources. And I think there's a tremendous amount of wealth creation there as well. So why not combine the two?
100%. I think it's the sensible option given things like customer retention, things like founder motivation, things like really just inspiration overall.
So give us an example now, Zeca, if you don't mind. I think it's fun to talk about this, but what makes it real are a few companies that you're involved in and how you're working with them. What areas are they attacking? What got you excited to say, okay, I'm going to go ahead and write a check?
Okay, this is great. I have to be very careful how much I discuss companies specifically, because, you know, obviously when they're early on, there's a lot of competition, and I would, you know, probably just default to what exists and do a little bit of like synthesis of what is already available. I can say one of the earliest companies we backed was Bankloop, B-A-N-Q-L-O-P. James Boscovic is the CEO, and they've put together an amazing team from across different transportation and logistics companies. They're attacking the zero waste opportunity set, which is a lot of corporations deciding to go in the direction of zero waste, hitting zero waste targets in terms of circularity, improving efficiency within the waste stream, if you will, the value chain of the waste stream. So they're currently, they passed their seed, backed by Mac Ventures. We're really excited to back them right out of the gate. And James is building this company that's focused on automating and using robotics in real time to process commoditized waste within municipalities. So within dump trucks, actually, within auto sort facilities and things like that. So that'd just be one example. And most of the time, these companies, like I said, they really already kind of know where they're going, what they want. And my job is really just to kind of be there as a cheerleader and there, maybe a connector, maybe somebody just to ping some ideas off of. There are others in the portfolio that I'm also really excited about. I could go on, I'm sure, for a long time. As an angel too, I've backed about 40 startups since 2019. So I don't want to maybe emphasize that as much just as a fund manager here, but there's a company called Climatize.Earth that they're working in the sort of retail investor space with a renewable energy projects and climate-based projects on, think of it like an Acorns, but for climate-based projects. So you go and you swipe your credit card and you know, can round up for the project. And instead of getting points that, you know, decay in value or you can't transfer trade them, you're getting investments into renewable clean energy-based projects from your, you know, excess spending, or you can, you know, use the platform to participate in different really cool projects. So just getting going, backed by Techstars and Will and Alba, both, they have a sustainability master's from Spain, I believe. They were in a program over in Spain and they showed up in the States, and just really excited about what they're building as well.
Zach, I appreciate your reasons for being a little bit reluctant and going into too much detail. So I won't push too hard, even though it's a proclivity of mine to do so. I'll skip that for the moment.
And instead, it's good. I like it. I totally love it. You know, you can get me to slip easily. It's no problem.
Dude, we do due diligence on a regular basis too on some of these companies. So on that level, which I know you can go into some detail if we're speaking more generically, then you and I have actually had some sidebar conversations about this early stage. Is it more the jockey or more the horse? You knew I was.
Oh, that's a good question right there.
You knew I was going to ask you this too.
Well, often. First of all, what do you feel first? I would be curious about your thoughts on that first.
Well, you know, because it's early stage, it's more the jockey for me because of the inevitable amount of decisions that are structural and fundamental that have to be made. And it requires, you know, really a steady and strong hand. You have so many choices on the product, on the tech, on the partnerships, on the hiring the team is huge. So how good
100%. Is 100%. You know, you're absolutely right. All of these things do make a lot of sense. And it may make sense to look at that in terms of from this excellent film you can watch it on YouTube. I believe it's publicly available at this point. It was done like 20 years ago. It's called Something Ventured. And some of the pioneers from Silicon Valley, you know, the Trader Estate and the, you know, these early venture capitalists talked about what the industry evolved into. But there was a quote from that film, and I wish I could recall who said it, but it's a great quote from that film that was, there are no firm rules in venture, except that there are no firm rules. So it was a little play on words, but it's also interesting to note that the innovation space in general is very hard to put a pinpoint on. You know, I put out a tweet just yesterday, like kind of a joke, this sort of analytics mathematics instructor putting together like partial derivatives course, and I wrote a little snarky thing on that and said, you know, dissecting unicorns, like basically reverse engineering unicorns, how almost how difficult it is to do and how almost pointless it can be at times. I think fund managers are going to have different approaches in the worldviews, philosophies, in terms of how they operate and how they focus on who they want to back. And I don't think there's any one wrong or right way, perhaps. The founders ultimately choose who they want to work with and who they want to have represent them to a certain degree. And frankly, I feel really kind of humble and thankful that people put their faith in me to stand behind them and hopefully make them look good, things like that.
Yeah, and in my conversations, I've picked that up about you, and I feel that's great. One of the things I wonder too is you invest for maximum return or IRR.
100%.
What is the subjective view you'll take towards your performance after you look at the number?
Oh, yeah. Well, first and foremost, I mean, there has to be a very strong ethical signal. I mean, if, in a world of signals, venture capital, founders are constantly giving signals, both negative and positive, from the standpoint of, scale, when this company is hopefully going to be a $5 billion company. If the founders have an idea of where that can go and what are some major pitfalls, and they can answer questions that maybe aren't as obvious on the surface, then usually it's a good telltale for myself that they have sort of what it takes to be able to steer toward venture capital in general. And it's a complex process, I would say, and it's very unique. Back to that quote, it's very unique to every circumstance. I'm thinking of another company. We backed a company called Parcel Health, and it's the CEO. She's a pharmacist, and she found as a pharmacist that I don't want to misrepresent here, but she was finding that there was just a lot of waste in the medical packaging arena, and she decided to create a solution for the 8 billion plus orange pill bottles, largely of which have really bad chemicals that you can't easily recycle, and make a recyclable version of these with a child resistant paper folded box. Very simple approach to the problem. And I'm really excited just to see people like that are driven and motivated by things that were the types of things you could easily overlook if you think about the opportunity set. And I think it's a massive opportunity in general, the waste packaging area, these adjacent opportunity sets around it are just really exciting, frankly.
We might have to send her over to Amazon next.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, there are all sorts of interesting startups sort of springing up in the mushroom packaging space, things you'd never think of, using mushrooms for, biomaterials and things like this.
Yeah, I have a company in that area too. I also point to Nespresso and places like that that use those pods that can't be recycled. And I learned a little bit about that recently. How do we do these things in this day and age? How do we continue to create enormous amounts?
It's hard. If you think about every marginal choice we make, it's all very like on the margin, it's always, I'm looking around my room right now, like, hey, I could shut off the light, these marginal decisions, same thing could be said about, going with the drip coffee versus the pod or something like that, convenience trade-off, et cetera. Frankly, the complicated thing about sustainability, which I find very fascinating, and it sounds like you do as well, is just how there isn't necessarily a one-for-one on every aspect of sustainability. So for example, maybe getting too granular, I guess, but save me if I go way too off the deep end. if you or yourself are saving time and or money using a product, you can allocate that capital to perhaps better use, a donation or investing into something that's more impactful or something. So it isn't necessarily cut and dry that everyone should be operating in the perfect system, and nor can we necessarily understand what that is, because we don't have complete information. And many, not to get too regulatory, but many people are talking about, you know, scope 3 emissions, scope 2, scope 1, these types of supply chain life cycle emissions that are currently not kind of regulated in the US, and what does it look like to have them there? And there are some opportunities around that for exploring. I think it's pretty exciting to look at. We backed another company called, actually, I don't know if I've announced it yet, but we backed another startup that is in the closed loops fashion sustainable supply chain space. And yeah, this idea of closed loop in general is very, very fascinating. I think, you know, life cycle analysis meets minimizing waste and, you know, community and things like that. So some companies try to work within a multi-factor sustainability context. And I think that's where it gets more interesting and sophisticated. And sometimes it can dilute the opportunity set, but other times it can actually really drive true value. So that's where I use my expertise.
Well, you and I both are acknowledging the issue, and it's a huge opportunity. I know personally I have a lot of improvement to make, and I know the world does. Let's pivot just a slight bit toward those CEOs, those entrepreneurs where you put a lot of your time and energy and in discussing and trying to provide some resource to them. Boy, is that the most fun, working with entrepreneurs who are open-minded and supportive and, you know, hungry for information, eager for opportunity to collaborate with other people? It's just
yes. You really don't need to say more. You said it very eloquent.
I know, but dig into a little bit of it. Where do you kind of focus? There's so many different areas, right? We can be looking over
leases. Did I say I was focused? Oh no. I mean
somebody like you or I could walk into a room, we could look over legal agreements or partner agreements, real estate shit, or we could be looking at product roadmaps or patents, or, you know, so where do you tend to lean in and try to help the entrepreneur, the CEO moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, largely it's back to the first principle of being a good startup investor is just get the heck out of the way. It's a hard thing to do, especially when, you know, ego's at play and money and all the rest. But I found personally that, like, highlighting what you said before about, I guess, for lack of a better term, the magic of the entrepreneur, the you know, the risk they're taking, the choice they've made to do something that's great, it's not a small thing. I mean, you know, we have maybe a little bit like of hero worship of entrepreneurs in this country as a capitalist country. I think that's probably good to some degree. But in reality, also, I mean, these individuals, they are going up against something that's very tenuous. If you just look at the statistics, the likelihood of failure is very high. And the suffering that goes into that experience is incredibly nuanced and should be respected, candidly. So I think starting from that place and then just trying, like I said, getting the heck out of the way and just being someone that can be a little bit of fly on the wall and there when needed, almost, you know, like a servant type. That's also the job. A lot of times just trying to get my ego out of the way as much as I can.
Yeah, that's a great point. Where do you, when you start to counsel with an entrepreneur, what's some sage advice that you try to impart before you do get out of the way?
I get this question all the time, and I can say this with 100% accuracy that I do not give advice, period, at all. And I, you know, I am actually an advisor to one startup that I worked for a long time back, just some friends basically. And I, even in that circumstance, I would never give advice. I think that a more powerful version of guidance is listening and being open and receptive and honest in a private closed environment. And that I do every single day, wherever I get the opportunity. But I don't lean in and say, like, this is me stamping the advice. And it's a little bit of, like, at this point, it's like my brand, because when I got started in this industry 5 years ago or so, I had not had an exit. I had not worked as a founder. I was basically told, like, hey, this is largely an industry of people who had scaled companies, got venture, got the exit. And that was a very strong bias. It still is. the data doesn't show those individuals that that had transitioned toward venture do better on a portfolio basis. The learnings that happen along the way are generally one where it's, you know, receptive, being open, being empathetic, learning, asking lots of questions, and then getting a grasp of when is the right time to speak, if you will. And that can be learned regardless of, you know, has been in the exact same trench or something like that.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I don't want to dwell on the startup venture without acknowledging the investment side. What are some of the other joys that you've had in terms of running the fund side?
Your questions are fantastic. Okay. This is a good one. Joys. I mean, you know, I just love Twitter. I love being out there and meeting new people online, especially. It's fun and engaging. It's kind of magic to run a community. So we have this community positive on Venture Scale Positive Impacts. We have about 10,000 people across the platform. I run a couple of side communities with LPs, GPs. I run this other one called The Hive, which is just founders and angels and getting a chance to riff and share some feedback and connections. And just, I guess, one of the joys from being a fund manager and a community manager in tandem is just getting the opportunity to see people succeed that I won't necessarily ever have a vested interest in financially. It's a real joy.
Oh, that's great. Hey, Zach, you and I haven't talked more about our joys outside of all this craziness. Too. What do you do to break it off and say, okay, I've got to disconnect and I'm going to go do something with your island upbringing and several other ventures? Talk to me about hobbies and other passions.
I love these questions. They're so down to earth and fun. Well, I love to travel. You know, my wife and I, we love to travel a lot, and whenever I get an opportunity, you know, it's not right now, it's not necessarily the best time, but it's always such a great way to keep the mind open and experience life. And you know, other cultures to me have really given me insight about why it's important to be here. You know, it's a big one. Getting out into nature, it's very simple. It's, you know, walking fresh air, seeing life in its all its forms, those types of things. It inspires me greatly. Yeah, I think those are some of those.
You could back it up by the fact I'm capturing you. Did you say you're in Denmark?
Well, here in Belgium at the moment, and live in Southern California. Love the whole SoCal, you know, the beaches in SoCal and such. It's hard to get away. It's really nice.
It's great to get away because those are some very different cultures and you need to kind of broaden it out a little bit sometimes.
Yeah, I really hope we get a chance to go for a walk or do some fun up in.
I look forward to it. You let me know when you're back. Safe travels. Thanks for spending some time today. I really enjoyed talking to you, as I always do.
Oh, it's tremendous. I hope to be back at some point. Congrats again on the 50th. Woohoo!
Thanks for listening to The Look Back. We do appreciate your support, welcome any feedback, and would love it if you would subscribe to this podcast and even consider sharing it with some of your friends. For more information and other cool info, check us out at newmanmediastudios.com.